Okay, good evening. Welcome to Clarifying the Sage's Intent Discussion Group. And we'll begin with the refuge prayer. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Saparivara Ratna Mandala Pudza Mega Samundra Saparana Samaya Hum. Om Mara Patsanadi, Om Mara Patsanadi, Om Mara Patsanadi. So welcome everybody, and we are continuing with our discussion of clarifying the sage's intent by Sakya Pandita. And we are using as our book, the commentary by Ape Rinpoche, teachings on Sakya Pandita's clarifying the sage's intent. And this book is available from Vajra Publications, which is www.vajrabooks.com. .com.np. Some people wrote in and asked where they could get the book. And if you order it directly from the publisher, it costs much, much less. We will also be using the text itself by Sakya Pandita. I don't know if you can see that. Yeah. Clarifying the Sage's Intent by Sakya Pandita. And that is the root text, which is, of course, much bigger than the commentary text. So Sakya Pandita lived in the 12th and the 13th centuries in Tibet. And he wrote this book towards the end of his career. And he wrote it as a practice manual for practitioners. Clarifying the Sage's Intent is actually a roadmap, so to speak, of the spiritual path. It starts from before a person becomes a Buddhist, actually. As they enter the path and they practice the path right up through the stages, right up until enlightenment. And it's a very descriptive map of the journey of spiritual development according to the Mahayana Buddhist tradition. So we've been having this group meet for some time now. And so far, just to review what we've done, the first chapter in the book is about Buddha nature, our spiritual propensity, as it's sometimes called. And this actually starts before a person becomes a Buddhist, and it talks about their spiritual potential and their inclination towards virtue to go on the path, so to speak. The second chapter is about when a person actually decides to take the step to become a Buddhist spiritual practitioner, and it talks about taking refuge, different kinds of refuge, and how to take it. And then the third chapter is generating the enlightenment thought, or as it's sometimes called, bodhicitta. And then the next six chapters are about the actual path of practice, which are called the six perfections. And so far we have covered the perfection of generosity, the perfection of morality, and the perfection of patience. So that has taken us through the first six chapters of Abhi Rinpoche's commentary, and tonight we're going to talk about chapter seven, the perfection of enthusiasm, or as it's sometimes called, joyous effort. It's sometimes translated as diligence. I don't particularly prefer to use the word diligence because it has a kind of feeling tone of hard work to it, and I prefer joyous effort or enthusiasm because the joyous part of it is a really important part of it, I think. Otherwise, it's just hard work. So what we will do is we will read a bit from Abhi Rinpoche's commentary book, and then where it's appropriate, I will add some extra commentary from Sakyapandita's root text itself, just to fill it in a bit. So I'll start off by reading Abhi Rinpoche's commentary. Chapter 7, The Perfection of Enthusiasm or Joyous Effort. The fourth perfection, the perfection of enthusiasm or joyous effort, is defined as the mental state which takes joy in virtue. If our enthusiasm is motivated by the wish to liberate all sentient beings from the prison of cyclic existence, conjoined with the Mahayana view of ultimate reality, our practice becomes the perfection of enthusiasm. So as we have said before in the past with the other perfections, these perfections exist on a mundane level. So morality exists on a mundane level, generosity, and also enthusiasm exists on a mundane level. What we're talking about is the perfection of these virtues. So in order for these mundane virtues, if you will, to be perfected, we need to have them be motivated by the bodhicitta motivation, or the wish to liberate all sentient beings from cyclic existence. In addition to that, it has to be conjoined with the Mahayana view of ultimate reality, in other words, emptiness or wisdom, as it's sometimes called. So if we have all three of those things together, then we have the perfection of enthusiasm. Continuing with Abhi Rinpoche's commentary, the forces opposed to the perfection of enthusiasm are three. Number one, laziness of not engaging in virtuous deeds through body, speech, and mind. Number two, laziness of, although being ostensibly engaged, striving diligently to cultivate deeds which are not virtuous deeds, while taking them to be virtuous, as the Indian heretics do. And three, laziness of putting effort into virtuous deeds, which result in the extremes of worldly existence and minor liberation. So the first one, laziness of not engaging in virtuous deeds through body, speech, and mind, is just simply what it says. We don't engage in the virtuous deeds. The second one, striving diligently to cultivate deeds which are not virtuous deeds. So this means having enthusiasm, but in the wrong direction. For example, there are some groups who believe that animal sacrifice is a virtuous deed. They kill animals and they make offerings to gods or goddesses, and they think they're creating virtue. According to Sakyapandita, that is a mistake. That's doing enthusiasm in the wrong direction, doing something that's not virtuous and thinking that it is virtuous. And then the third one, laziness of putting effort into virtuous deeds which result in the extremes of worldly existence and minor liberation. These are the two extremes that Mahayana avoids with the middle path. So on the one hand, we have samsaric existence or world existence. And on the other hand, we have minor liberation, which is liberation with a Hinayana or a lesser motivation. So those are both considered extremes in Mahayana. And in Mahayana, the goal is the great enlightenment, which is attained through the middle path. So any one of these three things are considered to be the forces which oppose the perfection of enthusiasm. Continuing with the text, a disadvantage of laziness is being unable to accomplish even ordinary worldly objectives, let alone the spiritual activities of listening, contemplating, and meditating. If we attempt to practice the spiritual path without enthusiasm, we will never accomplish the result. Furthermore, if we are lazy in our practice, results gained in previous lifetimes may be lost. When people are feeling lazy, they may think that some kind of demon is obstructing them and causing the laziness. However, Buddha said that laziness itself is the demon. There is no outside force causing it. This reminds me of a comedian who used to make a joke saying, "Oh, the devil made me do it." So sometimes we like to place the blame outside of ourselves, but in the case of laziness, there's no demon making us lazy. The laziness itself is the demon. So whenever we find ourselves slipping into laziness, we should call to mind the following. Laziness is the greatest obstacle of all to accomplishing the path of Dharma. Buddha said that without enthusiasm, we will never be able to accomplish even our own purpose, let alone the purpose of helping other sentient beings. And in a sutra, it is said that unless we possess enthusiasm, we cannot accomplish the practice of the other perfections. So Api Rinpoche is saying here that it's really important to understand this, that laziness is really the greatest obstacle there is. And so we really need to get a handle on laziness and develop our enthusiasm. Otherwise, we won't make any progress on the path. And not only that, not only will we not be able to help ourselves on the path, but we won't be able to help other sentient beings. And as a Mahayana practitioner, that's our motivation, is to help sentient beings. And then the other thing he says is that without enthusiasm, we won't be able to accomplish the practice of the other five perfections. And the six perfections are the path. And so if we don't have enthusiasm, we won't be able to accomplish any of the other perfections. And so it's really important that we have enthusiasm, that we understand the obstacles, and that we focus on accomplishing the perfection of enthusiasm. So now, Apa Rinpoche talks about the causes of laziness. Before we look at the methods for overcoming laziness, we must first look at its causes, which were taught by Sri Shantideva in the Bodhicharya Avatara, which is translated as a Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. So there's quite a few of these causes. Number one, being attached to postponing activities. So this means not only postponing it like, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, or I'll do it next week, or I'll do it later, but it might even mean postponing it till a future lifetime. And of course, that's not a good strategy, because the future is uncertain and the present is now, so now is the time to practice. Number two, being attached to other types of work, such as worldly activities, trade, or farming, In other words, having no desire to perform virtue and taking no joy in its performance. So this is a kind of laziness where we're just simply busy. We're distracted by worldly activities, whatever they are, work or other things. And we lack the desire to perform virtue, and we lack the joy. And that's what I was saying before about the joyous part of it is really an important aspect of it, I think. Because when you have joy about something, then you want to do it and you do it. And that's why I think it's really important to have that aspect when we talk about this perfection. Number three, being in a state of slothfulness through discouragement, because although one has been engaged in the practice of virtuous deeds for some time, one has not accomplished what one wished. So this is a thing that can happen sometimes when people have been practicing for a while. At first, you're really enthusiastic, and then you practice and you practice, but then you don't see the result that you wished for, whatever that might be in your practice. And so then you start to become discouraged. You start to think, oh, maybe this isn't for me, or maybe this doesn't work, or you start having these kind of thoughts which kind of bring you down with discouragement. And it's really something to be aware of, because it can happen that this comes up after you've been doing a practice for a while. That's why I think it's important, or where teachers say, don't practice expecting anything to happen. In other words, don't get caught up in hoping and looking for results. Just do the practice with faith, with enthusiasm, and that way you can avoid the discouragement. Number four, the laziness of belittling oneself, thinking one such as I could never perform such virtuous deeds. So this is kind of a spiritual low self-esteem, where you think, oh, I couldn't do that. I'm not good enough. I'm not holy enough. I'm not whatever enough. And so you belittle yourself, and it's actually a kind of laziness to do that. And that can also include self-destructive behavior. And that's something that we're going to talk about later, but that's included in this one. Number five, not engaging in virtuous deeds because of just lying around and relaxing. When I read this, I think of the Bruce Springsteen song, 57 Channels and Nothing On. Yeah, just lying around, maybe watching TV, surfing the internet, texting or whatever. So you're just simply not engaging in practice. Number six, being attached to enjoying worldly pleasures, such as eating, drinking, gossiping, etc. I think the etc., we could add quite a few things there to that list. I'm thinking of watching sports, watching TV, watching soap operas, watching the internet, any of those kind of so-called worldly pleasures where we get distracted by that instead of doing the practice. Number seven, not engaging in virtue because of spending day or night asleep. Sleeping too much, in other words, okay. A lot of really enthusiastic practitioners learn to reduce the amount of sleep that they're used to, and they take that extra time and practice with it, and they find that they don't miss the sleep, that they really didn't need the sleep because they've developed their enthusiasm for practice, and that sort of feeds them. Number eight, not feeling aversion towards samsara. Samsara is cyclic existence. Not feeling aversion towards samsara, meaning that we do not understand the faults of samsara or the faults of working for this life alone. So the faults of samsara, meaning that it's suffering, and the faults of working for this life alone, meaning that it's temporary and it ends. So This can also include what's called grasping towards harmful activities. And that might be something like a gambling addiction or an alcohol addiction or any kind of substance abuse addiction or anything that's what's called a harmful activity. And then we grasp or we get addicted to it. So in summary, it is apparent that most of the causes of laziness arise from our attachment to working for the sake of this life alone. So attachment to this life alone makes us think about the teaching called Parting from the Four Attachments. And this is a famous Sakya teaching that was received by Sachin Kungpa Ningpo, who was one of the five founders of the Sakya school. And I believe when he was about 12 years old, he went into a retreat, a Manjushri Wisdom Buddha retreat. And during that retreat, Manjushri himself appeared to Sachin Kungpa Ningpo and gave him the teaching of parting from the four attachments. And the teaching is just four lines, but it includes the whole path. And the four lines are, number one, if you have attachment to this life, you are not a true spiritual practitioner. Number two, if you are attached to samsara, you have no renunciation. Number three, if you are attached to your own self-interest, you don't have bodhicitta, or the enlightenment thought. And number four, if grasping arises, you don't have the view. The view of what? The view of emptiness, of the nature of reality, or of wisdom. So those are the four lines from Parting from the Four Attachments. And so as Apa Rinpoche says, it's apparent that laziness arises out of attachment to working for the sake of this life alone. So now that we've talked about the causes of laziness, we need to talk about how to overcome laziness. So the text says now, methods for overcoming laziness. The most effective immediate antidote for overcoming laziness is to reflect again and again on impermanence. We should reflect that this life will not last very long. My own teacher, Daishin Ajahn Rinpoche, once told me that being greatly attached to this life creates immense obstacles. He was referring to himself. He said that because he was so attached to this life, he could not benefit himself in any way. When we are strongly attached to this life, there is no possibility of maturing our minds in order to carry out genuine spirituality. We cannot turn our minds away from worldliness and hence cannot bring benefit even to ourselves. One who truly wants to practice Dharma must feel aversion towards this life's aims and ambitions. By way of illustration, it is said that there was a Kadampa monk who thought he was practicing Dharma very diligently. One day, while he was circumambulating a temple, a great teacher by the name of Geshe Thompa approached him and remarked that while performing circumambulations was excellent, it would really be better for him to practice Dharma. The Kadampa monk thought to himself that studying the scriptures must surely count as practicing Dharma, so he started studying the scriptures. Geshe Thompa again came up to him and said that what he was doing was excellent, but that it would be better still to practice Dharma. The monk thought that meditating might be the way to practice Dharma, so he embarked on the practice of meditation with great enthusiasm. Again, Geshe Thompa came to him and said that while practicing meditation was indeed excellent, would it not be better if he practiced Dharma? Hearing this again, the Kadampa monk asked him how Dharma should be practiced. And Geshe Thompa replied that the way to practice Dharma was to give up attachment to this life. When we think about how Dharma must be practiced, it may be likened to a meeting. If we called a meeting of many people and the chairman failed to show up, I guess today we have to say chairperson, failed to show up, the meeting would be unsuccessful. Likewise, while one is practicing, there are indeed many virtuous thoughts in the mind, but if the understanding of the impermanence of this life is not present, our practice will be unsuccessful. While we are totally engaged in worldly activities and our mind is attached to the eight worldly dharmas, gain and loss, fame and disgrace, praise and blame, pleasure and misery, no matter what deeds we perform, they cannot be virtuous deeds. Of course, as long as we remain within samsara, it is impossible for us to abandon these eight worldly dharmas completely. Nevertheless, if we perform deeds with the understanding of the need to reduce or abandon our attachment to these eight, we are entering the dharma. Excuse me. So the eight worldly dharmas, this word dharma has many different meanings, and it can be a little bit confusing sometimes, because here the eight worldly dharmas do not refer to the holy dharma, what we normally say dharma practice. And so probably a better translation might be the eight worldly concerns, or as one translator put, the eight poisonous dichotomies. And I think that's probably more to the point, because if we look at these eight, they are four pairs of two each, okay? So you have gain and loss as a pair, fame and disgrace as a pair, praise and blame as a pair, and pleasure and misery are a pair. So if we were to make a column and write these one under another, on the left side we would have gain, fame, praise, and pleasure. And on the right side, we would have loss, disgrace, blame, and misery. Now, the ones on the right side are easy to see as negativity. Obviously, misery and disgrace are negative. The problem is that very often we look at the four on the left side, the gain, the fame, the praise, and the pleasure. We tend to think of those as positive things. And from a Dharma point of view, that's a mistake, because we get attached to those things. We get attached to gain or fame or pleasure or praise, and they actually become a poison for our practice. So it's really important to understand these eight and to not get caught up, particularly in the left side of the column, because it's easy to fall into those, and we have to understand that those are like a trap for our practice. They're actually poisons. And going back to the text now, it is pure folly to be attached to this life, thinking that it is permanent. We should see that this life is short, and we have no idea when we will leave it. By being attached to it, we are only creating obstacles for ourselves. Take as an example someone embarked on a long journey, who, after having traveled for quite a while, decides to stop and rest. If he were to build an entire house to rest in, that would be a mistake, because he still has a long way to go. And similarly, if we worked just for this life alone, it would be akin to stopping and building a house that we don't need, as we will soon be leaving it. Therefore, it is a grave error not to keep in mind the impermanence of this life, and it is futile to work for the sake of this life alone. So, in other words, we need to recognize the preciousness of our human rebirth. And in fact, there is the term, the precious human rebirth. And it's important to understand, when we talk about the precious human rebirth, we're not just talking about any human rebirth. Just being human does not qualify us to have the precious human rebirth. The precious human rebirth actually has 18 different qualities that have to be present before we can say we have the precious human rebirth. So, for example, we have to be born into a country where we have contact with the Dharma. If we're born in an environment where we don't ever have contact with the Dharma, then we can't do the spiritual practice of the Dharma, then we don't qualify as having a precious human rebirth. So it's really important, if we do have a precious human rebirth, to recognize the rarity of it and the preciousness of it, and to not waste any time at all in any kind of, you know, worldly distractions, but to really focus on our practice, because, as he says, life is impermanent and we never know how long it's going to last. Going back to the text, enthusiasm itself is the remedy for laziness. There are two aspects of this. Number one, purifying the spheres of activity, and number two, practicing excellence. So the first one, purifying the spheres of activities. Another title for this is what are called the activities of attention. And in this case, attention means awareness. So what this refers to is taking what are neutral activities like walking or eating or washing the dishes, and turning those neutral activities into a positive, beneficial, virtuous activity. And so now Apa Rinpoche is going to give us a long description and many, many examples of how to actually do this in our day, in our daily life. So purifying the spheres of activities means that in addition to adopting virtuous deeds and refraining from non-virtuous deeds, we should transform all of our neutral actions into virtuous deeds. When sitting at home, the Bodhisattva should form the resolution, "May I reach the city of liberation." Likewise, when going to sleep, he or she should resolve, "May I attain the Dharmakaya of Buddhahood." If dreaming, "May I realize that every phenomenon is like a dream." When waking up, "May I awaken from ignorance." When rising, "May I attain the form body of Buddhahood." When dressing, "May I put on the robe of self-respect and shame." When tying up one's belt, "May my mind be connected to the roots of merit." When sitting on a mat, "May I attain the adamantine seat at the stage of awakening." When resting one's back against something, "May I arrive at the tree under which awakening is attained." When lighting a fire, "May the defilements be burned up." When the fire is burning, "May the fire of transcendental wisdom blaze forth." When food is being prepared, "May I attain the ambrosia of transcendental wisdom." When eating, "May I acquire the food of meditative concentration." When going outside, "May I escape from the city of cyclic existence." When going downstairs, "May I enter into cyclic existence for the benefit of sentient beings." When opening a door, "May the gate to the city of liberation be opened." When closing a door, "May the door to the three miserable destinies be shut." When embarking on a path, "May I enter upon the noble path." When going uphill, "May sentient beings be established in the happiness of the higher destinies." When going downhill, "May the continuum of the three lower destinies be broken." When meeting another sentient being, "May I meet the completely awakened Buddha." When placing one's foot on the ground, May I place my trust in accomplishing the welfare of all sentient beings. When raising one's foot, may all sentient beings be brought forth from cyclic existence. When seeing someone wearing ornaments, may I gain the marks and auspicious characteristics of a Buddha. When seeing someone not wearing ornaments, may I come to possess the excellent qualities of a purified person. If one sees a full vessel, may I be filled with excellent qualities. If one sees an empty vessel, may I be devoid of all faults. If one sees many happy beings, may I delight in the religious teachings. If one sees people who are unhappy, may I not delight in any compounded thing. If one sees a sentient being feeling pleasure, may I be equipped for the bliss of Buddhahood. If one sees beings suffering, may the suffering of all beings be pacified. If one sees a sick person, may all sentient beings be free from every disease. If one sees an attractive being, may all beings be attractive to the eyes of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. If one sees an ugly body, may beings not feel devotion towards evil teachers. On seeing someone being grateful for the kindness of another, may I repay the kindness of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. If one sees someone who is ungrateful, may none be indebted to wrong views. If one sees an ordained person, may I enter into the noble Dharma. If one sees someone undergoing hardship, may I be able to endure hardships for the sake of the noble teachings. If one sees a person wearing armor, may I gird myself in order to undertake the quest for the noble teachings. If one sees a person without armor, may I not gird myself for the pursuit of evil deeds. If one sees a person being aggressive, may all attackers be defeated. If one sees a sentient being praised, may all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas be praised. When one sees a city, may I see the city of liberation. When one sees a forest, may I become a place of resort for the whole world, including the gods. When the Dharma is being taught, may I attain inexhaustible confidence to teach the Buddha's doctrine. When crossing water, may I cross over the ocean of cyclic existence. When washing, may my body and mind be without stain. During hot weather, may the torments of the defilements be soothed. In cold weather, may I attain the coolness of extinction. When a religious discourse is being given, may I receive all the teachings of a Buddha. Whenever one sees a figure of the Buddha, may I acquire unobscured eyes to see all the Buddhas. When one sees a stupa, may I become a shrine of worship for all beings. When looking, may I become worthy of being looked upon by the world of humans and gods. When physically paying homage, may I obtain the head protuberance of a Buddha with dimensions such that gods and men cannot perceive it by looking. When circumambulating, may I attain that which leads to the qualities of omniscience. When some are approaching the excellent qualities of Buddha, may I bring to perfection the excellent, inexhaustible qualities. One should devise other suitable examples. When one sees people engaging in trade, one should resolve, may I attain the seven kinds of wealth of the Aryas. And then as a footnote, the seven kinds of wealth of the Aryas are the exalted ones are faith, morality, hearing, generosity, sense of shame, dread of blame, and wisdom. When fields are being watered and fertilized, resolve, May the crop of the thought of awakening be plentiful. When sowing seeds, may all sentient beings be implanted with the seed of the thought of awakening. When oxen are being yoked together, may method be conjoined with discriminating wisdom. At the time of plowing the fields, may the hard soil of the defilements be broken up. When weeding, may the weeds of the defilements be uprooted. During the harvest, may the crop of gnosis be gathered. As an aside, I'll just say that gnosis is defined as the cognition of objects of knowledge exactly as they are, and then their full variety and extent. Later on in the text, there's a more elaborate discussion of the different kinds of gnosis, and so we'll leave that for later. When the grain is being threshed, may the obscurations, together with all their propensities, be removed. When the grain is being washed, may I attain the fruit of complete Buddhahood. When climbing a ladder, may I accomplish the 10 bhumis stage by stage. The 10 bhumis are the 10 steps or stages of the exalted bodhisattva's path. When arriving at a house, may I arrive at the stage of a perfectly awakened Buddha, and so forth. For a more detailed account, one should consult the Discourse on Purified Objects of Experience. And then from Sakyapandita's root text, it's also listed, there are also listed some other texts, such as the Bodhisattva's Completely Pure Conduct Sutra by Rahula Bhadra, or the Flower Ornament Sutra by Manjushri to Jnanashri. So if you want more examples, you can consult those texts. In this way, we can purify our ordinary actions, which by their nature are neither virtuous nor non-virtuous, into virtuous deeds. If possible, we should consult other teachings about transforming the entire day into a day of virtue, and we should study them carefully and put them into practice. So that is the end of part one, purifying the spheres of activity in how to practice enthusiasm. So part two is called practicing excellence. Sometimes it's called perfectly complete achievement. And this is a very important practice. And so Ape Rinpoche says, practicing excellence. The practice of excellence involves undertaking all our actions for the benefit of both ourselves and other sentient beings. Both aspects are taught in all the Buddhist paths, although there are slight differences in emphasis. For example, in the Hinayana, the primary purpose of engaging in spiritual practices is to accomplish benefits for ourselves, and the secondary purpose is to benefit others. In the Mahayana, on the other hand, the primary purpose is to accomplish others' benefit, and as a byproduct, there will be benefits for ourselves as well. When we engage in practicing the six perfections, there are two ways of benefiting others: the direct method and the indirect method. For example, if we safeguard our money and possessions in order to give them away to others, we are working for others indirectly. When we actually give our things to them, we are working for others directly. As a byproduct of practicing these direct and indirect methods of working for the benefit of others, we also obtain benefits. For example, Through the actual practice of generosity, we gain comfort and fame, and we will attract an excellent circle of followers in this lifetime and achieve prosperity in future lifetimes. Eventually, we will accomplish the perfection of generosity and then the stages of enlightenment. So, by working for the sake of others, we also accomplish benefits for ourselves. When we study the doctrine for the sake of others, we are working indirectly for others' benefit. Whereas, when we teach others what we have understood, in order to dispel their ignorance, we are working directly for their benefit. By mastering the religious teachings and applying them in order to help others, one will be happy in the present life and be counted among the ranks of the greatly wise. One will overwhelm all opponents and be trusted by everyone, even by the gods. In future lives, one will achieve discriminating wisdom regarding each and every knowable thing. Further, as one will be reborn with skill and means, one's discriminating wisdom will be perfected. When we practice virtue, we must be in a happy mood and enjoy what we do. Otherwise, we will not be able to accomplish virtuous deeds. Even when it comes to worldly matters, such as professional work, we won't be effective unless we are happy in our work. We will be miserable, not to mention the effect we will have on the people around us. However, if we enjoy what we do, we can succeed. Likewise, if we undertake study or a meditation retreat with a happy mind, we will be successful. As explained earlier, when practicing the perfection of enthusiasm or joyous effort, we must conjoin it with the four positive qualities and abandon the seven attachments. The practice of the perfection of enthusiasm is also crucial for those following the Vajrayana path. So, regarding the comment about being in a happy mood and enjoying what we do, our founder, Geshe Toshi Namgyel, used to say very succinctly, people need happy. He used to say that you should make yourself happy before you sit down and meditate. Don't be in a grumpy, bad mood and then try to meditate. Don't make that association with meditation. Take care of your mood and then sit down and meditate. So be happy. People need happy. And as far as the reference to conjoining enthusiasm with the four positive qualities and abandoning the seven attachments. If you have been with us for the other chapters, at the end of every perfection, there are the four positive qualities and the seven attachments to be abandoned for that particular perfection. So Ape Rinpoche doesn't actually list them here, but in the other text, hold on a second. Sakyapandita does list them. So Sakyapandita says in his text, correctly accomplishing diligence includes two things, achieving the four excellent qualities and eliminating the seven attachments. The four excellent qualities are explained in the lines beginning for diligence, the destruction of the antithesis. Thus, the four qualities are, number one, freeing yourself from laziness, the antithesis of diligence. Number two, realizing the non-discursive through direct experience, the absence of a substantial self. Number three, perfectly fulfilling all the wishes of others by benefiting them with your diligence. And number four, maturing sentient beings by establishing them in the three vehicles through your diligence. three vehicles being Hinayana, Sutrayana, and Vajrayana. And then eliminating the seven attachments are, number one, laziness. Number two, procrastination, namely putting off making a diligent effort. Number three, premature satisfaction with your own diligence. In other words, doing a little bit and saying, oh, that's good enough. You know, I'll just stop there and leaving it like that. That's premature satisfaction. You haven't reached the perfection of it yet. Number four, the hope of getting something in return. Number five, the future results of a deed. Number six, the propensities antithetical to diligence, the laziness that has not yet been destroyed. And number seven, the two types of distraction previously explained in the chapter of generosity. So in case you don't remember what they were the distraction of attention, which refers to having a Hinayana motivation, meaning I'm just going to do this for myself and I don't care about other people. And number two, the distraction of conceptual thinking, which is thinking that the three factors are solid and real, the three factors being self, other, and the action itself. So in other words, not applying wisdom to the virtue that you're practicing, in this case, enthusiasm. Okay. So now going back to Apa Rinpoche's commentary, he talks now about the benefits of practicing enthusiasm. There are great benefits to be gained from practicing enthusiasm. In this lifetime alone, we will be able to accomplish all the worldly and spiritual activities. We will attract followers, wealth, and marvelous qualities. By obtaining wealth and acquisitions in harmony with religion, we will be happy in the present life and have no regrets when we die. Neither humans nor non-humans will be able to obstruct our Dharma practice. And we will gain knowledge and wisdom even in this lifetime. With regard to the benefits in future lives, we will be able to relinquish non-virtuous thoughts and accomplish virtuous thoughts in a short period of time. So we can see that all the purities and all the accomplishments arise from enthusiasm. This enthusiasm is the very source of accomplishing both worldly and supramundane qualities. Without enthusiasm, it would be impossible to gain these qualities, just as movement would be impossible without the presence of the wind element. Therefore, the practice of enthusiasm is indispensable. With regard to the ultimate result, the qualities resulting from the practice of enthusiasm at the stage of Buddhahood are the 10 powers and the 4 kinds of fearlessness and so on, and Buddha's activities for the sake of sentient beings, which are accomplished without obstruction. And I made a note to myself in the other text, and I have to go see what that's about because I've forgotten. So hold on a second while I check that. Yeah, basically, these qualities and so on of Buddhahood will be discussed in a later chapter. And so we'll just list them for now, and they will be elaborated on later on. And just to close tonight's topic about enthusiasm, I'd like to quote our founder, Geshe Thashi Namgyo, who said, "Listening and thinking about Dharma is a good job." that was his style of teaching and how he liked to succinctly say things. So that concludes tonight's discussion and reading of Sakya Pandita's Clarifying the Sage's Intent and the Perfection of Joyous Enthusiasm. So as always, we will close with the dedication of merit. By this merit may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness and death, from the ocean of samsara may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues that I might train to be like them. And through this dedication, praised as supreme by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little merit I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. So thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week, and we will continue in our reading of Sakya Pandita's Clarifying the Sage's Intent.